Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Alaska Governor and former Republican VP nominee Sarah Palin declared her own independence over the 4th of July weekend. On Friday, standing with family and a few neighbors in her backyard in Wasilla, Palin set off her own political fireworks.
So I choose for my state and for my family more freedom to progress all the way around so that Alaska may progress. I will not seek re-election as governor.
And not only will she not seek re-election, she's quitting. By the end of this month, 18 months shy of the end of her first term as Alaska governor. In Alaska and all around the lower 48, politicians, pundits, and regular folks are trying to make sense of it all. We are, too, this hour on Point, the Sarah Palin story and the GOP. You can join the conversation. Is Sarah Palin headed out of politics or deeper in? Is she gunning for the 2012 GOP presidential nomination? Should she? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. I'd like to welcome new listeners at 89.3 WFPL Louisville, Kentucky's NPR news station. We're glad to have you with us. We begin today in Alaska. Michael Carey is a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. We first met up with him at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul last summer. Michael Carey, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
What do you make of it? What is going on? Is she headed for the White House or headed back to Wasilla?
Probably neither. The general speculation here is that she'll leave Alaska to pursue some kind of lucrative dream, whether it's on television or as a speaker. We know the kind of money she can probably generate in those kind of things. I can't imagine she's going to be elected president of the United States after this performance. The performance in Wasilla, by any objective standard, was terrible. The statement itself was rambling. It was disorganized. It was a laundry list. And I don't see how the American people are going to have elect a president who has quitter in the middle of her resume.
It was definitely unusual for such a high-profile politician. She's tried to make a strength of that through her career. Let's listen to a little bit, Michael. Here she is in Wasilla, her hometown there. In the backyard, the lake behind, and the pontoon plane, her husband and family at her side, a few neighbors we saw when the camera panned around saying that calling her 18 months left in her first term and a no re-election plan, a lame duck status. Here she is.
Many just accept that lame duck status, and they hit the road, they draw a paycheck, they kind of milk it, and I'm not going to put Alaskans through that. I promised efficiencies and effectiveness. That's not how I'm wired. I'm not wired to operate under the same old politics as usual. I promised that 4 years ago, and I meant it. That's not what is best for Alaska at this time. I'm determined to take the right path for Alaska, even though it is unconventional and it's not so comfortable.
Sarah Palin in Wasilla on Friday. People have been talking about it all through the 4th of July weekend. Michael Carey, everybody's wondering first, was she somehow driven out of office in Alaska? There have been all these ethics cases.
This is clearly a personal choice. A lot of things happened that shouldn't have happened, particularly in the way of some of the ethics complaints, which were frivolous and silly, and rumors about alleged corruption. The FBI put out a statement, you saw that they're not investigating Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
She's been treated unfairly at different times, but cry me a river. Bill Clinton could tell you all about that. Hillary Clinton could tell you all about it, and Barack Obama, for that matter, could tell you all about it. He's been called a terrorist. So if she feels that she got a bum deal, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy out of me. Sorry.
I'm not feeling a lot of sympathy in general, though if you look at polls around the country, she polls very highly among conservative Republicans, among fundamentalist Christians, and almost even in the population at large by a new Pew poll. What's put you in the sour camp, Michael?
Well, I've covered her for several years. First of all, I wanted to say that I have received numerous emails from her dedicated supporters, some of whom can't spell, especially they can't spell the profanities. But more generally, their allegiance to her is so intensely personal and so devoted, it really doesn't extend to examining particularly performance. It's about who she is and how she conducts herself in the sort of symbolic realm. I'm against abortion. I'm against big government. That seems to be enough for some of these people. For myself, she came back here after she ran for vice president and started feuding with virtually everybody in sight. It's been a very unpleasant experience for Alaskans. I think she has very little loyalty in the Alaska legislature anymore. She doesn't have any loyalty among the political leadership of the state. So it's gotten to be quite a mess. And while she's been treated unfairly in some cases, largely it's of her own making.
What do you make of her argument that if she's not going to run again, it's better for her to clear out of the governor's position there? What do Alaskans make of that?
That was really showing contempt for other governors, Alaskans in other words. What, Arnold Schwarzenegger is just milking the system in California or various other governors around the state who complete their term? And usually governors, at the end of their term, they feel that there's something important they'd like to leave as a legacy. Her legacy is, baby, I'm done with this. I'm gone.
Done, gone. Is there something else coming in Alaska? The FBI says they're not investigating her. But
no, I mean, you know, I'm very skeptical of that and have been very skeptical since the bloggers started flogging these allegations of corruption. The Palins, it seems that from time to time, have taken advantage of the situation here. Remember, Sarah Palin received a per diem in her home when she was away from the mansion. But, you know, she enjoys money, obviously, and she's going to get paid for this book deal. But she's not corrupt. I don't see that.
She talked about a sports metaphor here, and she talked about winning. There was a lot in her remarks there behind the house in Wasilla that could be interpreted as describing a leadership role for the GOP. Here's her kind of basketball analogy.
You are naive if you don't see a full court press from the national level picking away right now. A good point guard, here's what she does. She drives through a full court press, protecting the ball, keeping her head up because she needs to keep her eye on the basket. And she knows exactly when to pass the ball so that the team can win. And that is what I'm doing, keeping our eye on the ball.
That's Governor Sarah Palin, formerly Sarah Barracuda, her nickname as a high school basketball star. Michael Carey, standby in Anchorage, Alaska. Joining us right now from New York is Mark Halperin, editor-at-large, senior political analyst at Time magazine. He writes The Page at Time.com. Mark, thanks for being with us.
You betcha.
We talked with both you and Michael at the Republican convention in St. Paul last summer. Now here's Sarah Palin headed out, and she says she's keeping her head up so her team can win. How do you interpret that? What might it mean?
Well, I think there is a germ of a rationale in the disjointed presentation she made. I think that to the extent she has an agenda, and I think that's the biggest question mark about her as a national leader, but to the extent she has an agenda, she has become too much of a target in Alaska to be effective, I think, as governor, or to use Alaska as an effective means to raise her national profile and increase her chances if she'd like to be president. So I think, in a way, while it may have been for some an irresponsible decision, and certainly not very well explained, I think there is a rationale for it that we may see fleshed out in the coming weeks.
Bill Kristol, conservative commentator, suggests, you know, crazy like a fox here, that this may serve her well. You say that people who interpret this as meaning she cannot run for president in 2012 are dead wrong. Why?
I don't think it's possible to run for president as an incumbent governor in Alaska. The physical distances are just too great. You cannot get to places a presidential candidate needs to be fast enough. In addition, I don't think she was on a trajectory to build a greater record in Alaska that she could run on as a platform. Yes, it'd be great to have more experience in government and to have more accomplishments. But given what she let happen to her relationship with the legislature, given that she had become the target of the national press and of ethics complaints in Alaska, I don't think she could dig herself out of that. So, again, there's two ways to talk about her. As a potential, seeing all this through the prism of is she going to run and does it strengthen her hand or not? And then there's just the spectacle. And in terms of the spectacle, I feel badly for her and her family and the position they're in, some of which they brought on themselves. And in terms of being a presidential candidate, I think she's in exactly the same position as she was before. I don't think she's a strong presidential candidate. Maybe she can become stronger, but I don't think she's any weaker after her performance on Friday, as disjointed as it was.
Why not a strong candidate in that the Republican Party's in quite a lot of disarray now? She's as prominent as you can be in the GOP.
Because you need more to be a presidential candidate. You need ideas and a national platform and a record of accomplishment and an ability to impress insiders, not just grassroots activists. Those are all things that she lacks. There's going to be a lot of work would have to take place for her to get the confidence of independents and the kind of establishment figures, fundraisers, politicians, more senior level activists who have picked in large part every Republican nominee in the modern era.
Michael Carey, in Anchorage, you're saying you don't really expect her to head south to the lower 48 and build a 2012 campaign. Your eye is turning more toward money-making possibilities, publishing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a real good question here, whether how well thought out this decision to leave was or how impulsive it was. There are some people who think that she did it on Friday simply because she was afraid she'd change her mind by Sunday. I don't know if she's going to stay here. I mean, we expected that she wouldn't run for re-election, and it's absolutely true that it would be very awkward to run for President of the United States while governor of Alaska. I mean, there were difficulties when she ran for vice president. But whether she's going to move to New York or Los Angeles or commute from here or what she's going to do, I mean, that remains to be seen. I just don't see how you become President of the United States pursuing, if she is pursuing a political fame and political opportunity in the manner that she is, that's so disjointed, disorganized, and you have quitter right in the middle of your resume. That's not profiles and courage.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Sarah Palin, her Alaska bombshell, and whether she's all done or just getting started. Here she was, lakeside behind the house in Wasilla, on Friday, saying she was going to make a difference outside of political office. She did not, however, indicate what her next step might be.
My choice is to take a stand and effect change and not just hit our head against the wall and watch valuable state time and money, millions of your dollars, go down the drain in this new political environment. Rather, we know we can effect positive change outside government at this moment in time on another scale and actually make a difference for our priorities. And so we will, for Alaskans and for Americans.
Sarah Palin, Friday in Alaska, saying she won't run again. In fact, she's quitting the governorship there at the end of this month. Michael Carey is with us. He's a columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. He's also head of Anchorage Edition on Alaska Public Broadcasting. Mark Halperin's with us from New York, editor-at-large, senior political analyst at Time Magazine. Let's get a call right here from Blaine in Amherst, New Hampshire. Blaine, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Dwayne, actually.
Hi, Dwayne.
My question is, considering that Sarah Palin has seems to operate in some kind of an alternate reality the rest of us don't seem to get, and she appeals to a certain fringe of people, and that she has certainly screwed over a number of Republicans right there in Alaska in her own party, she's done more damage to the Republican Party, is it possible that she might be making some play to be the possible Green Party candidate or some alternate party candidate where she's hoping to somehow affect change in that manner?
A third party? Maybe not the Green Party. I mean, this is drill, baby, drill, Sarah Palin. Mark Halperin, how about it? First, to Dwayne's assertion that she appeals to a fringe. The numbers don't say that to me.
No, she's got pretty broad appeal for a politician and certainly a big platform. She has a lot to work with. If she decided, and I don't think she will, I agree, if she decided as a single-minded focus, I want to be a player in 2012, I want the Republican nomination, I think there's a lot she could do to build up her support within the party, theoretically. I just think it's unlikely that she's got the ability to do it, the people around her that would be required, willing to make the lifestyle changes that would be required. But there's no indication that she's interested in a political future outside the Republican Party. Of course, it's difficult for anybody, left, right, or center, to succeed in national politics or even most state political systems, except as a member of our two major parties. So I don't see that at all. It is the case, I don't know, her support certainly extends beyond the fringe, but it's certainly the case that it is with independent voters where she really cratered during her 2 months on the national ticket and where she'd have to build herself back up, not just to win a Republican nomination, but to show that she would have strong appeal in a general election.
Let's get a call from Des Moines, Iowa, and to Jacob. Hi, Jacob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You know, I think that a lot of political analysts and pundits have really missed the big picture, or they focus too much on the macro picture and miss the personal touch to the story. I think that Sarah Palin, what she's doing here is she's trying to do what she believes is best for the people of Alaska, and I think the pundits and analysts have focused too much on where she's going. And I think that the pundits can all agree that she's going somewhere. So the point is that Palin feels, since she's going to be somewhere else, she can't fully devote herself to the people of Alaska as governor. And so she wants someone else to take that role so that she can focus on wherever she's going next.
Yeah, that's definitely, you definitely capture the sort of curve and sweep of her argument there. Some are buying it, some aren't. She also made a fair amount of reference Friday to the politics of personal destruction and the pain and financial debt that her family's accrued. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
And this political absurdity, the politics of personal destruction. Todd and I, we're looking at more than $500,000 in legal bills just in order to set the record straight. And what about the people who offer up these silly accusations? It doesn't cost them a dime, so they're not going to stop draining the public resources, spending other people's money in this game. They won't stop. It's pretty insane. My staff and I spend most of our day, we're dealing with this stuff instead of progressing our state now.
Michael Carey in Anchorage, you hear Jacob in Des Moines saying, you know, maybe she's done the math right. Maybe net-net this is better for Alaskans if she's got this, the ethics challenges, the debt and split focus that comes with that. Could it be that she's right, it's better for Alaska?
Well, I think if you polled the Alaska legislature, virtually, 55 of the 60 members would agree that they're glad she's gone because they got along so badly with her. If you got a poll or you were able to talk to the political leaders and business leaders around here, most of them would feel the same way. So lots of people are going to be happy that she's departed, and they'll take their chances with Sean Parnell, the lieutenant governor who becomes governor. But, you know, it's pretty amazing. I wrote something in the Los Angeles Times, which ran yesterday, pointing out that who did she quote as wisdom in her decision? She quoted her parents' refrigerator, a note that was on it. Don't explain, your friends don't need it, your enemies won't believe you anyway. And she certainly lived up to that. She didn't explain, and her enemies are not going to believe her, that's for sure.
Mark Halperin, what about her complaint of the politics of personal destruction? There definitely, people may not respect Sarah Palin, but there's clearly been some piling on here at the same time. What do you make of the legitimacy of that complaint here?
As I said earlier, although she has brought some of this on herself, quite a bit of it, I would argue. Her family has been put through a lot. She's been put through a lot. She doesn't have the infrastructure or the temperament to deal with all these ethics complaints. And I think between that and her relationship with the legislature, she's not on a trajectory to be an effective governor with the remainder of her term. Again, if you want to talk about it in terms of personal and spectacle, I think that's a big part, I'd say the major part, as best I can tell, of why she's stepping down. If you want to talk about it in terms of the context of is she a potential president, strong presidential candidate, this is the kind of stuff you have to deal with. And the fact that she couldn't deal on a smaller scale, as any state is, with these kinds of things, doesn't speak well of her ability to withstand the rigors of national politics. And the fact that she couldn't adequately explain, any of the three of us could better explain her rationale for why she did this, at least what we think, than she did on Friday. It was an embarrassing performance by the standards of many people, and she's turned off a lot of Republicans, consultants and strategists and office holders, because you cannot take a major moment in your public life and treat it so casually.
Let's get a straight-up Republican pollster and strategist view here. David Winston joins us from Washington. He served as director of planning for former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, was chief information officer for the Republican National Committee until 1993. David Winston, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, and you and a lot of Republicans must be looking at the calculus here. First of all, what did you make of the governor's announcement and the manner in which she made it?
Well, first, it was clearly a surprise. And when you have things like that occur, you sort of wonder exactly how did she get to that conclusion. I guess in terms of thinking about where does she intend to go from here, I mean, if her focus is how to be on the national stage. Leaving the office that gave you that stage, I think, is problematic without anything clearly identified in terms of what her next step is going to be. I have to say I found it a sort of befuddling event in terms of exactly what she was trying to accomplish and where she's trying to go. And I think part of what we have to watch is what she does over the next couple of weeks in terms of transitioning to wherever she thinks she's going.
You must have heard from a lot of Republican movers and shakers over the long weekend. What's the word out there? Is this good for the party, bad for the party? Would people welcome her sort of moving south and moving on to the circuit and putting down infrastructure for a real run at the presidency?
I don't think it's even gotten to that stage. I think right now what you're likely hearing from most Republicans is sort of confusion. What just happened? and what that means, but it's still very confusing. I mean, she had some elements in her speech, and I agree with both Mark and Mike, that, it was sort of a rambling speech. It was not one of those things that was as well thought if you're going to do a statement in transition like this as it should have been. And particularly the dynamic of, given the one question about her had been her experience to move away from a position that could add to that experience and let her sort of develop some accomplishments, I think at the end of this, what you're really hearing from Republican consultants is really sort of confusion. What just happened?
What about just the Republican power players? I mean, even before the announcement on Friday, who has been rooting for Sarah Palin, or what sector of the GOP? What sector rooting against?
No, I mean, clearly, conservatives within the Republican Party were the individuals who supported her, but she had broad based support within the Republican Party. And I agree with Mark. I mean, the dynamic that occurred for her in the campaign was when she had difficulty with independents, and so her sort of appeal ended at the edge of the Republican Party and not sort of going into that swing voter group that helps you build majority coalitions. So, I mean, in terms of moving forward, I mean, she's still very well liked within the party. The obvious question is, given the fact that she's giving up the one position that could allow her to extend herself beyond that in terms of showing accomplishments, that being sort of swing voters and independents, how does she now approach those voters if she's got higher ambitions?
And what about Sarah Palin and the future for the GOP as the GOP thinks about what it wants to stand for, what kind of party it wants to be? Where does she fit into that argument, that debate?
She clearly fits into the sort of within the Republican world, the sort of conservative side of that. Having said that, I think what you're watching on the Republican side is this sort of discussion internally, and we'll see who emerges as leader as a result of this, of where is the party going, what's the next big idea for the Republican Party, and whoever really defines that is the person who's likely to have a leg up in the presidential race. Having said that, that's one of the dynamics that you even saw Brill Crystal say, is that, okay, she's done this transition, but for her to sort of stay relevant on the national stage, what's the idea, what's the issue that she's going to promote and drive? And she clearly didn't define that in that speech.
David Winston, stand by. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Carl. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I hate to use a sport analogy because it seems like the sport analogy has been really overused, but I'm going to use one anyway. Basically, when owners and players say it's not about the money, normally it's about the money. And I believe we are all missing the big picture here. The last time I checked, despite what Republicans and conservatives said, this is still a capitalistic society, and I don't blame her one bit. She could make, for lack of better words, goo gobs of money on the public circus instead of being in Alaska. So I believe that this is more of a money move. She sees that she probably can't get the nomination for the Republican Party because, let's face it, they don't think her to be a serious candidate, although none of them will say that because the hardcore conservative base would be annoyed with them if they come out and say that about Sarah Palin. So she couldn't win that. And even if she did get past that hurdle, she couldn't beat a president like President Obama in the general election because she just doesn't appeal to enough people to do that. So I don't blame her and her family for making this money grab right now, because let's face it, that's what we do in a capitalistic society.
Carl, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call. Don't blame her and follow the money. Mark Halperin, what about the money? We read rumors of a seven-figure deal for her memoirs that should come out, next year maybe. There's talk about a TV position, though I've seen nothing confirmed. But at the same time, she says she's $500,000 in debt on legal fees.
Tom, she certainly could get offers, certainly is getting offers to do TV or radio or public speeches. If what she wants to do in the next few months or years is make a lot of money, she has opportunities to do that. It would certainly involve at least some travel. And remember, she still has young children, and she's got to make those life decisions. I think doing that also is a way to, if she does want to run for president, increase her ability to be out there communicating ideas. I go back, though, to something Dave Winston said, which I think is the key to Sarah Palin. If she does have a future as a leader of the party, she must stand for something, not just platitudes of boilerplate rhetoric that almost anyone in the Republican Party stands for, but serious, substantive ideas that are well communicated. Being on TV and radio would give her a platform to do that, but that's the platform. She still needs the ideas.
David Winston, maybe she stands for the little guy. You got Ross Douthat writing today that Barack Obama stands for, he may have come up from humble beginnings, but he's been to Harvard Law School and all the rest, stands for sort of the meritocracy. Sarah Palin as the representative of the hoi polloi here, the little guy. How about that? Is that enough?
At least you were sort of pointing in a direction, and that was part of the problem with the speech. I mean, she didn't identify any direction. I think it's likely to be, there's got to be, why does she stand for the little guy if that's the direction she decides to go? But and she needs some relatively big idea. I mean, the other dynamic that occurred in terms of that speech was the one thing that she's perceived at is this sort of unusual character who does sort of unusual things that sometimes people questioned, and so the event the other day reinforced that. Had she stood up and said, look, I'm leaving because here's my two or three things that I really want to accomplish, and it's very difficult for me to do it given this present position, that would have at least made more sense. I do agree that there's one other thing that Mark mentioned, and that is obviously if you're going to engage at a national level, being in Alaska and trying to travel down in the lower 48, that's very difficult to do. But also in this environment, you do have new media, and she obviously seems to be using that quite well. So even that particular argument doesn't hold. I mean, this goes back to that basic speech. She didn't explain what it was that she wanted to accomplish in terms of why she was leaving, and that was a fundamental hole in that speech.
She's writing on Twitter. She's writing on Facebook. Laura in Winchester, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Laura.
Hi. I'm calling because I think that there's so many people out there that are presuming a significant analysis on her part. And if you listen to what her spokesperson said to Anderson Cooper, for example, she said she made the decision as it was something like as if she was in a vacuum. And now she has to decide what she's going to do. And I really think that that's the case. I mean, if you look at how she decided this, she said she polled her family. My bet is that she had a discussion in her head and with her family and maybe with one or two other people and made this decision. It's how she chose to make budget decisions early in her administration.
Is it a good thing or not?
No,
or what?
I don't think it is. But I think the presumption that she has some grander plan that she didn't explain to us is wrong. I frankly think that she made a decision based on how things are going today and she doesn't yet have a plan.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's up with and what's ahead for Sarah Palin and the GOP. Mark Halperin, political analyst at Time Magazine, is with us. Michael Carey, columnist for the Anchorage Daily News, is here. He's watched Sarah Palin for a long time. And Republican pollster and strategist David Winston joins us from Washington. David Winston, here's a question from a listener online. Brian asks, what about Ross Douthat, Republican thinker's assertion in today's New York Times that Sarah Palin should have turned down John McCain's invitation to join him on the GOP ticket last summer? What do you think, David?
No, I mean, when you're given an opportunity like that, I mean, it's a tremendous opportunity, and you should take advantage of it in the sense of it's obviously a unique opportunity. So I don't think you get anywhere by turning down unique opportunities. I think the broader problem for her at this point is again, where is she going and exactly how does this facilitate getting there? I do want to go back to one point, Tom, that I do think is important, mm-hmm. though, and that is this whole concept of the legal bills and sort of the politics of personal destruction. I do think that across across the political spectrum, whether it's Republicans being involved in this and Democrats, that there are too many people being sort of charged with ethics issues because people politically disagree with them. And I think for both parties, whether that be Bill Clinton, whether that be Sarah Palin, Karl Rove, I think you see people being drug into legal dynamics because people politically disagree with them, and I think that's a very unfortunate turn of events.
Yeah, we've seen it right across the board. Let's go to Rick in Iowa City, Iowa. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Quick comment. It's just a guess, but I think we might be witnessing the birth of the female Rush Limbaugh, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
The female Rush Limbaugh. Michael Carey, how about it? Does she have Rush Limbaugh? You may agree with him or not. He's a pretty smart cookie and pretty good with his words. Do you see the potential there, I don't know, on the air or symbolically for Sarah Palin?
Well, I've been on the radio with her, and they've been a host when she was the guest. We were on for at least an hour once, and I've been in other forums with her. Again, and your guests alluded to this, what's really important is for her to achieve some kind of mastery of something. She'd have to master becoming a talk show host. It would require work. You can't just show up and wing it. The question is, would she be willing to do that? And I want to go back to one thing. You know, when after she came back to Alaska and had run for vice president, there were many people here, many people back east, and perhaps including your guests, who thought what she really needs to do is do some hard work, master some subjects, give some speeches around the nation at friendly venues, perhaps the Heritage Foundation or something like that, that showed that she'd learned something about health care, that she learned something about foreign policy, that she learned something about something. She hasn't done any of that. It's the same old sort of cult of personality. I'm Sarah, here I am.
Period. So you yep. say. Sam, Hingham, Massachusetts, what do you make of it?
Hi, Tom, and all. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Speaking as a committed independent, a so-called radical centrist,
okay.
I have these observations. You know, we're talking about whether or not she's made this move out of pressure, tired of the pressure, whether she wants to spend perhaps 2 years taking crash courses, force-feeding her brain with foreign and domestic affairs factoids so she can stand on the stage and appear reasonably intelligent and informed. Or was she trying to get out just prior to some soon-to-break scandal? This kind of leads me to a suggestion for the Republican Party, again, coming from a radical centrist
okay.
independent, and that is that they change their logo from the elephant to the hippopotamus. If we think of Sanford and Pressler and all the other list of Republican hypocrites of the last few years, it would seem hippopotamus would be more appropriate than
okay, ever. Okay, we got it. Hypocrites, hippopotamus, I don't know. David Winston, by any measure, it's not exactly a fun time for Republicans.
No, we're tied to the elephant, though, so I don't think that's why.
I don't expect that. But what about, does this help or hurt? I mean, we don't even know what she's doing yet, but...
No, I think at the moment what it is, unfortunately, I don't think she meant it to be this way. It's sort of a distraction in terms of kind of like what is the next big idea for the Republican Party, and every time it gets focused on just personalities, it misses the larger dynamic, and that is when you go back to Reagan, there were big ideas. When you go back to Newt, there were big ideas. And that's where the focus needs to be if the party is going to be able to reemerge again. When it's just purely about the sort of draw of an individual and how large their audience might be, which you very well might have, but it's still it's where's the direction of the party going to go? And to some degree, you watch the Democrats really face that after 2004 when Kerry lost. They realized the direction they were going just simply wasn't working, and they had to rethink things through. To some degree, this whole sequence, unfortunately, because of that hole in her speech, because she didn't say where she was going, leads to that same problem. Okay, so what's the big idea?
Let's go to Ames, Iowa. I think Tim may have a more positive sense of Sarah Palin and her energy. Tim, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my phone call.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems to me, you know... that Sarah Palin is really part of a
as I see it anyway, just a resurgent Republican Party. They are energized. They seem pretty angry to me about, you know, Barack Obama, and you witness those Tea Parties and all the commentary that's gone along with those. And granted, that's the base, but they're so united in their opposition, and Sarah Palin really taps into that. So I actually see some better days ahead, if you will, in a fairly short order with the Republicans, given how strongly motivated they are in opposition to Barack Obama and the Democratic Party.
Do you expect Sarah Palin to get out front of that, to be the leading voice, maybe the nominee in the 2012 race?
Possibly so. I mean, she right now, and of course, 3 years away. Who knows what will happen? But the Republicans don't seem to have a single leader they've coalesced around, and you know, Mitt Romney seems to have some troubles with the evangelical base of the Republican Party because of his faith, and it seems with Sarah Palin, she just sets them on fire. You know, we all saw what happened in St. Paul, Minnesota last August at the Republican National Convention, and you know, here in Iowa, you know, the evangelical base of the Republican Party, they're really kingmakers as far as the Iowa caucuses are concerned, and we saw that with Mike Huckabee's victory, so...
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if she's the nominee.
Tim, thanks for your call. Mark Halperin, give us your political wisdom here. You know, there may be all kinds of critiques of her oratory style. Maybe people don't like the way she's prepped or something else. But what about just that raw appeal Tim points to with a base that will, after all, decide the GOP nominee?
Well, first of all, I'd like to dispute the premise that being a radio talk show host is difficult and requires a lot of work.
Some homework, we hope.
Yeah. She has a lot of appeal, but she does not have enough appeal right now to be the Republican nominee for president. She needs, as we've talked about already, she needs to appeal to independents. She needs to appeal to the elites in the Republican Party. It's a grassroots party at one level, and having grassroots support is great to raise money in the Iowa caucuses, but it's not enough in order to raise the money, have the issues imperature that you need. If you look at, you know, Karl Rove, who tried to be a little bit poker-faced when he was on Fox News on Sunday when asked about this, but I think anyone who's even passing familiar with Karl Rove knows what he thinks about that performance, and it's representative of what a lot of people think. I bet if we shot Dave Winston with some truth serum, or maybe got him a little liquored up, he'd be a little bit more critical than he's being. Because that is not a performance that a political professional would look at and say, this woman used the moment and has a place to go forward, building off of what she did and what she plans to do, no matter what she does day to day. Appeal to the people she appeals to is great, and anyone in politics in either party would like to have that, but it is simply not enough. I don't think it's enough to sustain a national radio or television program at the level some people sustain. She needs a lot more than she has to do any of the things we're talking about.
But David, the Republican Party has turned to, you know, fiery representatives in the past who may or may not have been the favorite of the elites. I mean, Tim in Iowa says she's got the stuff out where he's looking around at those who will vote, and they're not independents by and large in that primary. I mean, could the GOP turn to Sarah Palin again just because she can fire up the base, and then, you know, whether or not it makes the most sense for the general election calculus?
I mean, she's certainly popular, very popular in the base, and there are certainly some things going on in the country that has engaged and energized the base. But again, 21% of the American public is conservative Republican, 16% is liberal Democrat. Both numbers are well short of the 50% you need to create a majority coalition. Look, the problem that she's got, if she's going to be running for president, and any Republican, is, so why should you govern? I mean, the purpose of a political party is to prove you're ready to govern, and this is where I do have a fundamental problem with her. Leaving midterm doesn't necessarily reinforce your commitment to governing, and that's what people are looking for at this point in time, and so I still think, unlike Pawlenty, who just simply said he wouldn't run again, right, that's what people sort of expected in terms of, okay, that makes sense. But I think where she may have crossed the line here is this idea of leaving midterm, and I think that's problematic for her.
Let's go to Lori in Rockport, Massachusetts. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by a preponderance, I think, of male opinion on the subject of why did she leave and what's she going to want to do next. And as a former working mother, I've recently been laid off.
Yeah.
But
sorry.
I have my immediate reaction to Sarah Palin and her speech and her leaving and all of the mystery surrounding it was that this is one overwhelmed woman who has just made a personal decision, much more than she's made a career decision. And I think that this sort of singular focus on what does Sarah Palin have up her sleeve may be missing the larger picture. You mentioned the $500,000 worth of debt. She has mm-hmm. two babies in her household, mm-hmm. one of whom special needs and one of whom is clearly an infant. She's constantly under the spotlight, and even Mr. Obama, a very composed person, has had a little trouble with that. And I just can't help but think that this is a woman who just needs to step back and take a break, and that she's very overwhelmed. And I think speech may be the best
evidence of that.
Yeah. And so I just would be interested in your perspective on sort of the bigger picture of Sarah Palin, not Sarah Palin, Republican candidate.
Right. Let's take it just personally, Michael Carey. You're there in Alaska. I mean, it is a lot that she had dumped on her and that she grabbed here, maybe with that big family and the kids and the debt and everything else. Maybe just at a personal level this makes sense, whether or not it's easy to articulate to the public.
There's a possibility that she just decided, got up in the morning and said, I don't want to do this anymore, for a variety of reasons that are family and others. But, I mean, I guess we'll see if she assumes a vigorous work schedule in which she's traveling and making speeches and away from home. We'll see how that's compatible with, I was just, you know, I wanted to stay with my family and get away from all the hard work of being on the road and being governor and that sort of thing. They had one other thing about being a talk show host, and since I've done it, I think you respect your audience by preparing. Mm-hmm. And my experience with her is she didn't prepare for anything. I know Rush Limbaugh could probably do his show in his sleep, but I doubt that Sarah Palin could sustain a show 5 days a week the way Rush does without some kind of work.
Well, we may get a chance to find out. Let's get a call from Steve. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The thing that concerned me about the last two vice presidential candidates is they both satisfy a good number of what's needed to diagnose a person with narcissistic personality disorder. And this is a very serious comment. John Edwards and Sarah Palin, I'm not the only person calling. This has been discussed a lot. It's got me, I don't know what to do about it. It just, you know, civics lesson. It's got me appreciating the Founding Fathers' original intent with having a more independent role for the vice president, the person that's going to take over next. But I think that people have been talking about this, and if you look especially at the resignation speech, I think this just is very strong support for people to look at her behavior.
Yeah, let us pick it up, Steve. Our time is short. Mark Halpern, how about it? Todd Purdom in Vanity Fair has this phrase, narcissistic personality disorder. Maybe a lot of politicians could be tagged with that phrase. Is it fair to come at Sarah Palin in particular with that?
I'm not going to diagnose her from this distance. I think she has a public image problem. My view of presidential politics and national politics is you need to control your public image. You look at somebody like Newt Gingrich, Dave worked with, is an incredibly smart, talented, dedicated public servant. But his chances of being president are severely limited by people thinking negative things about him that he's contributed to. And I think that's the problem she has. She's letting and the people around her are letting too much be said about her without her trying to control the storyline and the narrative of her life and what she stands for and what she's about. And that's unfortunate for her if she has national ambition, because it's very hard to make a second impression in the age in which we live.
David Winston, just a few seconds here. Final thoughts. When will we know, by your lights, whether Sarah Palin's gunning for bigger office or not? What will be the first indicator?
Oh, I think it'll be relatively soon, because if she's going to engage in that, she's going to do some trips down to the D.C. area in terms of whether she puts together a national PAC or a political action committee or something along those lines. So I think we'll see that pretty quickly. If I may go back to Mark's comments real quick, because I really agree. What this speech also allowed happened was the analysis has really sort of gotten out of her control, and people are defining her more than she's defining herself at this point. And I think that particular speech allowed this to happen. It was not a good example of, if you're going to reframe yourself, how you do that.
Well, Sarah Palin stands up to speak, and the world pays attention. We'll be watching. David Winston in Washington, thanks so much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Michael Carey with the Anchorage Daily News. Great to have you back with us, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst at Time Magazine. Mark, always great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
You betcha.
And a personal note today, I wanted to say thanks to Jack Beatty and Jane Clayson and Jackie Leiden for jumping in so well here in recent days. My wonderful mother, Norma Ashbrook, died 2 weeks ago after a long and admirable life. She was a beautiful, powerful woman, the deepest guide to me and many others. And her sweet power and beauty came from a love for all the world. We hope to keep a little piece of that going right here. Thank you for being part of that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.